Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss the topic of understanding enterotoxemia in calves. And to discuss this, I'm joined today by Dr. Lindsay Wachter-Mead, who's a Nebraska Extension educator and also veterinarian based in South Central Nebraska. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Aaron.
Well, we are in the spring calving season here in Nebraska, and one of the diseases that impacts calves is enterotoxemia. Share with us some things we should understand about this disease and also some management practices we might utilize to minimize the impact of it.
Sure. So I think it's important to just kind of take one step back and talk about this classification or this bacteria that we're dealing with, because it is in the same family as some other common issues that we see in cattle, and not just in calves, but this Clostridium actually falls in the same category as tetanus, botulism, black leg. So there's different types that also deal with not just the purple gut or the enterotoxemia. There's a lot of different strains, of the Clostridium that can be affected. I bring that up just because when we talk about prevention and everyone knows about vaccinating for a 7-way or an 8-way, you know, it's important to understand what that 7-way means and what's in it. And a lot of times we will be covering all of these diseases as one, but, you know, it is important to read the label and see what you're vaccinating your cattle for. But so back to the topic at hand. So let's talk mainly about newborn calves and or pre-weaning calves is where I would focus today's conversation. And enterotoxemia would be the name. Purple gut would be a common name that you might see, but that would be caused by the Clostridium perfringens. So that's a type of the bacteria. It is a gram-positive bacteria, and it just hangs out in the environment. So it's always there, and it's actually part of the normal gut flora in calves. And so when a calf is healthy and we don't have any issues, then potentially we might not have any problems with that disease. But again, it is always in the environment, so we're always exposed to it, and some places are going to have more than others. One important thing to know about Clostridium perfringens is that it actually has different types, and the types go, you might see this on a vaccine. So if you've ever had the C&D vaccine, that's a type of the Clostridium perfringens, and there's actually 5 types. So A, B, C, D, and E, and they type them based on the type of toxin that they produce. So this bacteria, what it actually does is it's not necessarily the bacteria, but once it gets into the gut flora and it starts to sporulate or replicate, I guess that would be a good way to put it, it will actually produce this toxin. And it's the toxin that starts to cause issues. That's where we see the clinical signs. So maybe the bloating, the kicking at the belly, you know, and it really happens really fast. And so that's how they classify what type that you're dealing with. So if you ever have had a case of purple gut or enterotoxemia, and you've had that calf posted, they can run tests at the diagnostic lab to see what type you're dealing with, because there are different strains that are out there.
So I think if you have had that experience, and I know you have and I have as well, it's one of those situations where you go out in the morning, everything looks good, and then you come back in the afternoon and you got a calf kicking at his belly, and a short time later, you have death. And that can be very discouraging, frustrating, yeah. Because how do you prevent that? How do you manage around that?
So it's important to understand what makes that calf sick, I guess, in the first place. So I already said that it lives in the environment and actually can be in the GI tract. But what causes it to replicate and cause the toxin is when that calf has a large amount of the bacteria that's present in the GI tract. So we increase it. And then it has to have some source, that bacteria has to have some source of nutrition. So like a protein or a carbohydrate that's going to support that overgrowth of the bacteria. And that's where it comes in from potentially getting if we're talking about newborn calves or neonatal calves, you know, they may have gotten a big meal. So for example, today we're on day 3 or 4 of coming out of that winter storm. And there may be a lot of calves that didn't pair up, and maybe, you know, they were just sheltered from the storm. And then if they get back together and they take a big meal, then that may be the perfect environment for that bacteria to start to replicate and grow. And then we're going to start to see some clinical signs of it. And the third thing is we have to have usually something has to slow down the motility of the GI tract. So if they take that big meal, and then, you know, it could be stress related that maybe their GI tract isn't working quite as well. They have shown some studies where there's actually a combination of disease process going on. So possibly coccidia on top of it will slow down the GI motility, and then we're going to have a bigger issue with that showing up. So what you want to watch for would be you can't prevent Mother Nature, unfortunately, but we want to try and keep those cows and calves paired up as best as we can. So encourage the cows to get up, whether that's, promoting feeding, putting hay out or something to get them up so those calves can pair up, making sure that calves aren't getting lost and, going under fences and getting separated so that we can keep them together. That's going to be really important. And then you had already mentioned checking. So it's always important. It's just a good management practice to get out and check those calves twice a day. I think is a really good plan to do. So, if you feed twice a day or you just do morning and night checks, just walk through them all and get everybody up and see what they're looking like. And if you do start to notice a calf that maybe is slower, definite signs are going to be that acute kicking at the belly, bloat. They might start to look pretty big. A lot of times you won't even see diarrhea because it happens so fast, it doesn't get to that point. But if somebody just looks off, then you want to try and intervene. And treatment isn't the most rewarding. I'm sure that you've experienced that too, but there's a couple goals that you're trying to do, and talking to your veterinarian to have that process will be really important. But what we're trying to do is try to relieve that bloat or that abdominal distension. But it's important to remember that the bloat isn't just a simple bloat, like you can't pass a tube and let it go. A lot of times it's kind of trapped inside the lumen, and so you won't get much results from that. So you can potentially use an antitoxin. So they do have that product on the market. And it also does respond to antibiotics, but differently, because if again the bacteria is actually inside the stomach and the intestine. And so actually oral antibiotics seem to do a good job with that too, so that it doesn't have to metabolize through kidneys or liver. But having a treatment protocol on hand is a good plan. And again, it's quick, if you have to find it right away and hope that you can get that. So treatment isn't always the most rewarding.
One of the things you mentioned that I think really does get my attention and reminds me of a management practice that I think is really worth considering. We often think about, in like the storms we've had, having huts or places for calves to get out of the weather. And so when it's snowing and blowing, of course, they go in there and they get out of there, but they're a little hesitant to come out and nurse. And a manager once told me, he really emphasized, get into those huts, get those calves kicked out of there, make them go pair up. And, even lock them out for a period of time so they don't just camp out in the hut and then go out and take up a big meal. And I thought that was a principle that really made a lot of sense to me. We think about protecting the calves, but sometimes we almost may protect them too much if they're not going out and routinely nursing and actually then have some non-intended consequences.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, it is hard. Like, you can't control what the weather's going to do, but I think it helps if you have multiple areas for the cows, so that if you don't have just one shelter where they're all going to try and bunch in, and maybe they can't even physically come out, that potentially can be a problem too. But if you have multiple areas where those calves can kind of spread out a little bit, and then the cows can find each other. But again, the key is getting them up. And I'm pretty notorious about when I do my morning and night checks, I want to see everybody up. Like, even if they're resting, I'm like, I'm sorry, I gotta see that you're doing okay, and kick them out. And then hopefully they go find mom and they do what they're supposed to do. But it is important to keep them paired. The other thing that I noticed, and you might want to pay attention to the amount of milk that your cows are producing, because if you have a problem with enterotoxemia and it's a repeat issue, pay attention to your records and see if it's a repeat cow issue. It doesn't always, it's not always going to be a slam dunk, but if there is a cow that makes a lot of milk, and if she's, it's usually those big calves that we see it happen in. If that's a repeat thing, that might be something to take a look at and see if she's, how well she is producing, and if we're starting to have a problem with, just too much milk production, that might potentially be an issue too.
So, Lindsay, sometimes I also hear talked about get those cattle out of the dry lot, get them onto clean ground. Is there any validity to that, or what's the thought process there?
Well, I mean, you can, unfortunately, all Clostridium species, all the way from tetanus, black leg, all of it's just found in the environment. And so, but you can control your environment to a point. So, if you have Uninterrupted sod is always beautiful and perfect. And if it was a perfect world and we could be on that, that would be awesome. It's still going to be there, however, but it's the potential of if your cows are in a lot of dirt lots and or mud, especially after storms, and we're getting biomatter on the udder, so mud or feces, anything like that, then that calf has the potential to pick it up. And also, we know calves are super curious, so calves will, they'll kind of mouth around on ground too. So they're gonna pick that up too. But if you can spread them out, and if you have areas, again, looking for areas that maybe you don't normally use in calving season. We've talked about this before, but is there something that would be available to you that maybe isn't normally that you do use, but you could turn them out and spread out, especially when we're talking about adverse environmental conditions and weather coming in, even for a short time. I think that will outweigh, the benefit of trying to keep them up close just so you can watch them for calving. When you can spread them out, that will help. Dilution is always a good idea.
What else would you focus on as we think about this topic?
So the biggest thing, we haven't talked a lot of, we talked a little about prevention with vaccines, but this is, there are some good vaccines out on the market. Pre-calving vaccines where we actually have like a C and D inside that vaccination. So then that cow will start to lay that antibodies into her colostrum is important. So if you have a repeat issue with enterotoxemia, that would be something I would strongly recommend adding to your protocol. Some people will vaccinate calves, after they've hit the ground. And so there is a little bit of a that again, that's a protocol you need to set up with your veterinarian and assess what risk you have. But there are some vaccines that are available for calves after a certain age, that you can start to give them some of that prevention. Unfortunately, purple gut and enterotoxemia can happen. It can happen when they're really young. It can happen all the way up through. It can, all the way to weaning. And so finding the perfect time to get a vaccination may be difficult. And it's also important to remember that vaccines are strictly an insurance policy. So vaccines do not, they are not 100% foolproof. It is nice to have that game plan on hand, but also just discussing the management concerns that we already brought up, looking at the cows, how they're doing, and then potentially if you can kind of spread out in your environment and control that to the best of your ability, those all together can try and help combat, some of the frustration that does come along with clostridial disease.
Well, thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Aaron.
Well, for more information on health-related topics for beef cattle production, I would encourage you to visit the beef.unl.edu website. At the website, we have a number of resources on these topics.